for Mother's Day, Do Wackadoo.
Oh, I love to hate this song.
Do Wackadoo.
Let's check it out.
I wish I had your good luck charm.
You had a do wackadoo, 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 wackadoo.
Leave it up to your imagination.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Like,
when's the last time? When's the last time you've been in the Cadillac with girls in the front and girls in the back?
The last week.
Last time he had his wackadoo.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic!
It was in my imagination.
Well, I hear tell you're doing well, Greg. So
yeah.
And good things will come to you.
Yeah.
I wish you had your happiness and you had new wackadoo.
If I wackadoo it, it will come.
All right. Well, Mother's Day. Excellent, excellent movie. And you know what? Who directed Mother's Day?
Our friend
Darren Lynn Boozman.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and hear our interview, Greg and my interview with director Darren Lynn Boozman on behalf of Tales of Halloween and his vignette, The Night Billy Raised Hell.
First of all, director Darren Lynn Boozman, thank you very much for speaking with us here on Breakthrough Entertainment. And we're talking with you about Tales of Halloween, particularly The Night Billy Raised Hell. I saw the movie. I loved the entire thing, but your short was my runaway favorite.
Thank you so much. You know what's awesome about being a filmmaker is it's funny because you just said that was one of your favorites on the movie. That's people's least favorite, too. And, in fact, there are some that says, why was that one in the movie? And that's what I love about being a director is that, you know, being polarizing. And I think that I've been lucky in my career to be polarizing. People love what I do or they hate what I do. And I love it. It makes me happy. The people that love it make me as happy as the people that hate it. So thank you very much for being on the other side of it, because that always makes me feel a little bit better. But I really appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, how were you approached with this idea? And I mean, how did this anthology come together? Could you paint that picture for us?
Yes. So Mike Mendez, here's the thing. The horror community is a very, very small community. We all hang out. We all go to the same bars. We have parties. We have barbecues. And I'm talking to everyone. Like, we all hang out together. It's crazy. Mike Mendez and Axel approached me and said, hey, we got this idea. We want to do an anthology. And I kind of, you know, here's the problem with Hollywood is everyone does a lot of talking, not a lot of doing. So when they told me about it, I kind of acknowledged it and said, yeah, sure, that sounds like fun, not realizing that it really would happen in only a few months after they asked me about it. It all came together very, very quickly. So the first thing that excited me was I get to work with my friends. And I think anytime you have a chance to work with your friends, that's awesome. So it was all directors that we were friends with, cast that we're friends with, everyone was people that we're friends with. So it wasn't even like a job. It was just like, hey, you want to come out and hang out with your friends for a couple of days and make a movie? And you can do whatever you want. So it was a great experience.
Absolutely. And Darren, in terms of anthology versus, you know, just the full-length feature where you're, you know, the director behind the scenes for the whole hour and a half, 2 hours, how would you compare it? I mean, the difference. I mean, did you prefer, and like you said, because you got to work with a lot of your friends, prefer an anthology but by, you know, just directing one or two, you know, short story-type segments versus, you know, the whole full-length?
So first thing is there's a lot of pressure taken off me. I think when you're doing a feature film by yourself, the pressure's on you. If it sinks or swims, it's based on you. I think that one of the great things about this is you are one cog in the wheel of a much bigger whole. I think that what I love the most about doing this movie versus a feature is it the support system. There was so much support on this, from Neil Marshall to Axel to Dave Parker to Adam Girash. Everyone was there to help everyone else and make sure we wouldn't fall. And if we didn't have something, they would be like, hey, well, you don't have that. We do. Borrow ours. Like, hey, I need a fog machine. We have a fog machine. Take ours. So that was number one. I think that was great because everyone had a vested interest in to make the best movie possible. It wasn't just me trying to make the best movie possible. It was us making the best movie possible. So I think that right there was miles above some of the other projects that I've worked on where, you know, it's kind of the onus is on you to, as a director, to make the best thing. So that's number one. Number two, what also was great was it takes years sometimes to get a movie made, years. And with this, it happened so quickly that it actually was fun. Most movie making experiences, not necessarily fun. It's arduous work. This was fun. And I think that you don't get that a lot of times in filmmaking because the time commitment was so small. And lastly, I get to work with my friends. Every single one of the people on the crew, the cast, everyone was people that I'm friends and or family with. So I think that was the other thing which made it really, really interesting for me.
Well, Darren, I think that one of the things that sets the movie apart for me, I mean, because I can't tell you how many anthology movies I've seen, and I've just, like, been totally disappointed. Maybe I've liked one of them, one of the shorts, but this one, you know, I love them all. There was, you could tell that there was a collaboration, cohesion in the themes. I loved all the little hints and connections that ran through the different kids, the trick-or-treaters that showed up and stuff like that. So, you know, could you talk a little bit about that, how that worked out, where, you know, certain characters showed up in the background of others?
Yeah, Mike and Axel were very, the only rule they gave us is said that we can't make these in a vacuum. We have to share with the team so we can figure out how to interconnect them. That was it. And so we interconnected them by all going to each other's shorts. We would sit there and we'd hang out on set and we'd say, oh, okay, this trick-or-treater's here and oh, I can do this here. So it was, we were involved from the very beginning. A lot of these anthologies are made in a vacuum. They give the filmmaker a budget and say, you have this much time to do it, and they go off and make it and turn it in. We weren't like that. You know, remember when I shot mine, I was one of the last ones to shoot. Everyone was on my set. You know, I had Neil Marshall and I had Axel and Mike Mendez, Dave Parker and Adam Girash. They were all there and they were watching and they were saying, Darren, can you do this? And you can connect it with this one. So I think that there was, you know, the attention to detail was extreme on this movie, which is awesome. We also got the scripts very early on. So I got to read everyone's script very early and said, oh, you know what I can do? I can have a car pass here, which would connect to this one over there. We can have this trick-or-treater here, which would connect to that one over there. So I think that was another big, big plus.
Absolutely. And, you know, Darren, you've had such a great career in the horror genre, one of the top horror directors. And who were some of your inspirations growing up? And I'm assuming you were a huge horror fan as a kid and teenager.
Yeah. Well, Wes Craven, which, you know, I have, and it really, really affected me, his death, for numerous reasons. First off, he was the reason I got into filmmaking. Last House on the Left, Hills Have Eyes, Nightmare on Elm Street. These are movies that define my childhood. I think that I would start off by saying Wes Craven, absolutely. Then I would probably move from there to Roger Corman. Roger Corman was a guy that you know, his thing was, he just wanted to tell stories, and he just would just do, turn out movie after movie after movie. He wanted to continually make these films. And I got to hang out with Wes Craven on a yacht after Saw 2. It was one of the craziest experiences. I went to Saw 2. I was in Puerto Vallarta premiering Saw 2, and I was on this, got invited to a yacht. Knew nothing about it. I'm sitting there on the yacht, and this guy comes over to me, and he introduces himself. And I'm Roger, and blah, blah, blah. I look at him, and I was like, it took me a second. I was like, oh, my God, that's Roger Corman. And it was an amazing experience, because growing up, he was a guy that I wanted to be like. He just didn't give a fuck about the system. He did whatever he wanted to do. He made these insane movies, gave all these insane starts to actors and directors. So I think he was a huge inspiration for me, because he just didn't care about what people thought. He cared about just making these things and putting these stories out into the world. So I was like, that was someone that I really, really admired. Same thing with Lloyd Kaufman in a weird way. Lloyd Kaufman just, you know, wanted to make these crazy, weird, out-of-the-box movies, and he didn't give a fuck about anybody. I think that I've kind of adapted that mentality in the last few years, and I think that's why I've been able to continue to make movies. You know, I'm 36 years old, and I've made 12 feature films, and that's, you know, it's insane that I've been able to do that. I think I've taken a card out of the Roger Corman book.
Darren, can you talk to us about whatever you've got next and when we can expect your next project to hit?
Abattoir I filmed last year. It was a passion project of mine. I've been trying to get made for 4 years now. Finally got made last year. Editing turned into a lot bigger process than any of us assumed due to the visual effects. I've never made a movie with this many visual effects in it. So just finished the visual effects. It's a movie that I'm insanely proud of, and it's very different than what you've seen from me. You know, if you look at Saw, I think a lot of people were surprised when I went from Saw to Repo. This is as different as my leap from Saw to Repo. It is not a horror film, regardless of what people might think, because the title Abattoir, it's completely like a murder mystery is what it is. It has horror elements, absolutely, but I think it's better than that in some respects than just a genre film. It's a thriller, it's a mystery, it's a noir, but the premise basically is about a man who goes to crime scenes and buys the crime scene. He literally shows up to houses where murders take place. He buys the house and rips out the room where the murder took place, and he's building a house of these crime scenes. It's commercial, it's cool, it's big, it's different, but I think the style of it, and that script was written by Chris Monfett, the first one, is so, I hate to use the word Aaron Sorkin, but it it's very newsroom West Wing-y, the way the dialogue's written. It's very 1950s. It's written in this very snappy repertoire, like rat-a-tat-tat-tat kind of dialogue, which I love. So it's something I'm excited for people to see just because of how different it is.
And you enjoy more in the sense when you get to write your scripts as well as direct it, more control on the film perhaps in that case?
First off, I'm going to give a big shout out to Clint Sears, who actually wrote the episode of Billy Ray's Tell. Clint was my high school best friend and middle school best friend in Kansas City.
Cool.
And him and I have been working together recently quite a bit. We've actually sold a couple of screenplays. So that was his first produced screenplay. I want to give a shout out to him on the Billy Ray's Tell. And regarding my writing, I actually prefer not to write my own stuff because when I write my own things, I become so ingrained in what I wrote because there's so much energy spent. Like if I just wrote Abattoir 2, they've already had me writing Abattoir 2. And what's awesome is I know the world. I just directed the first film and I know the world. But the problem is I've just spent 2 years writing the script. I am so engrossed in what I've written, and I feel it's the gospel. It's going to be hard for me to step outside when I get in as a filmmaker and as a director that says, you know what, this actually doesn't work. This is actually terrible. And that's the problem. When I write my own stuff, I don't see that. When it's someone else's material, I have no aversion to say, wow, this is bad. We got to change this. This has got to change over here. So I would love to continue to write and let other people direct it. And I love that writing process. But when it comes to directing, I think I would rather have someone else's scripts in front of me for the most part, so I'm not emotionally connected to them.
I hate to bring up Saw because, I know it's just one piece of your career, but, you know, is there any way that you would return to the franchise? Because I think we keep hearing about Saw Infinity or whatever they want to call it, Saw 8. Any chance you'll return to that franchise?
Probably not, and it's not me. I would love to at this point. I think it comes to, well, here's the thing. I don't think they should hire me. I mean, I would love to do it. I think that for Saw, if Saw wants to reinvent itself, it needs to reinvent itself. It's got to reinvent itself with new actors and new directors and new writers. I think that trying to put us back in it would probably be a disservice to the project. So I would say no. That said, would I? Absolutely. Saw gave me my start. Saw was amazing. I mean, I was frustrated at the time when I was making Saw because I was a frustrated filmmaker and I probably would have been frustrated with anything I did. That said, Saw made me. It gave me the ability to make what I wanted to make and do what I wanted to do. So absolutely I would return if they ever asked me.
You know, before we let you go, one final very quick question. Do you have a Halloween costume picked out for this year?
No, but my son does, and I have a new kid. It'll be his first Halloween. He's 10 months old, and he's going to be a pumpkin. What I'm going to do is I have a Halloween sweater I got from Mondo. I'm going to do that and put on a Halloween 3 mask from Shamrock, and we'll probably go with some weird Halloween thing from Halloween 3.
Excellent, excellent. Well, again, director Darren Lynn Boozman, the movie is called Tales of Halloween. I loved it. Probably one of my favorite Halloween treats of all time. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, some great stuff there. And again, I mean, the movie in general, great. But
hasn't he been on the show before?
Yeah, he has been on the show, yeah. I think, for the Barons. I talked with him twice, I think, once for Mother's Day. I'm not sure if we featured that.
Mother's Day, was that the one with the 80s actress?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't
remember.
What's her
name? Rebecca De Mornay.
Yeah, Rebecca De Mornay. Yeah. Yeah, Wally George's daughter.
Yeah. Did you like that movie?
I did. It was okay, yeah.
And she used to be married to Patrick O'Neill, who's the son of Ryan O'Neill. And Patrick O'Neill, of course, is the host for King Games on Prime Ticket and Fox Sports West.
There you go. And
the other brother? What was his brother's name? He's the guy that was a druggie.
Oh, man. I will look it up. Unless you know it and are just asking.
I do know it, but I can't think of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we've got a lot more here on Breakthrough Entertainment's Halloween Spooktacular Part 3. And coming up after the break, we're going to be talking a little bit about a haunted house.
Griffin.
Okay.
But a haunted house that's right here in the valley that Greg and I visited, Field of Screams. But before we get to that, we need to hear a little bit from Percy Faith, theme from A Summer Place, from Rose Red.
Oh, okay.
Did you ever see Rose Red?
Ooh,
I didn't.
Scary.
You didn't.
You know where I think of this song is from Con Air when they throw Dave Chappelle out of the plane. Oh,
and it's the perfect example of a song that has many meanings.
I don't know why I'm playing this right now. It's way too early, but I guess we can let it play.
That's too early, is it?
Yeah. No, it's not. You're right.
Yeah. I think we're about off here. Of course, Breakthrough Entertainment, and we're going to speak with Bill Tomachoff when we come back and talk about Tomachoff Farms. Good stuff. We'll be right back.